Welcome to the Car Deal Advisor Podcast Show. The presenter of this show is Hugh Hedrick. Get ready for special motoring legends and great deals on your next set of wheels. So the five red lights have just gone out and it's go, go, go.
Welcome to the Car Deal Advisor Podcast with me, Hugh Hedrick, and my special guest, Jonathan Sutherland.
Hello there, Hugh. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's a pleasure to be here, as always.
Should we tell our listeners about what we've been doing for the last hour?
Yeah, well, this whole recording was meant to start over an hour ago, but we got slightly distracted talking about various cars that we'd like to buy, working out which cars that we own that we quite liked. Would it be good? Would you get a 911 GT3 or the GT2, all slightly hypothetical since we're both broken.
Yeah. That's why we need our donations page to increase dramatically.
Our PayPal account is.
Yep, there's a link on the website. Right, so it's great to have our listeners on board and on tonight's show. It's all about manufacturers. We're going to start reviewing our favourite cars. And also, we're going to go through a whole manufacturer. Tonight, it's going to be BMW. And we're going to go through every model that they offer. And Jonathan and myself will give you our expert advice on what we think is good and what we think is terrible. So, shall we get started?
That sounds like a blooming good idea.
The first BMW in the lineup is, of course, the 1 Series. It comes in 3 and 5 doors. It's been around for a while now, and it's very popular.
It certainly has. It's a car that I've owned. Have you ever owned one, Hugh?
I nearly bought a 120 diesel M Sport automatic. That was back in 2009, when they were giving them away. They had it for £140 a month.
That is unbelievable. That was back then before PCPs were really cheap.
Yeah, of course.
I enjoyed mine. It was a good car. I had the one with the bigger engine, the M135i. Mm-hmm. Even when I had it, the one I had was basically the current model. It was actually a bit behind the times, and that was in 2013. It was already been perhaps left behind by maybe the Golf R and some of the other new models that have come on the scene in terms of interior space, and some of the sort of plastics in the interior were not perhaps up to the highest standard. But I have to say, as a drive machine, it was phenomenal. The big engine one was incredibly powerful. And I believe the residual values are quite strong with a BMW propeller on the nose. Well, keeps the values high. What are they like nowadays for PCPs?
Yeah. Oh, they're pretty good, and it's a decent discount. I mean, at one point, you could buy a new M135 for about £27,000 for the entry-level car after a discount, and that was brand new. Which is a huge amount of car for the money when you think that's barely a mid-spec mocha.
You can have your favourite car, Hugh.
Or even now, a top-end Astra or a top-end Focus. It's got 5 doors, but it's going to be nowhere near as exciting as that.
Exactly. It's basically a hot rod. And that I had, you'd still get 35 per gallon out of it, and that's petrol, so it's obviously cheaper than diesel. So it wasn't even that inefficient.
I like them. I think they're, I remember driving, I got to one as a courtesy car when my old BMW was getting serviced, and it was just a standard 118 diesel. It was just, must have been about 7 or 8 years ago, even more than that, actually. And it was incredibly good on fuel, and yet it was still fun to drive. And I took it over the hill road near Gifford and that kind of way, and it was fantastic. I do quite like them. I definitely think it's a good place, but I think you've got to be at the right price. Don't get one that's over-specced and, kind of overpriced. You really need to go for either a base model or something really quite good to make it worth the money, I think.
Yeah, there's some pretty dull, humdrum-looking ones around with sort of rather dull, non-metallic greys, or maybe they are metallic, but they don't look that metallic, or small kind of frilly wheels, as yours used to say, and they just don't look right. You need a nice M Sport 120D or 118D, or of course just go for the 135 or 140 M140i. Absolutely terrific machine, and it looks better now. When it looks odd. The one I had was the pre-facelift version. And it's sort of, I think Jeremy Clarkson once said, like a startled mackerel. I don't think he was being complimentary.
No, perhaps not. But, okay then. So, let's go on to the 2 Series, and especially the 2 Series Coupe.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like firstly, it. What about all these cars that BMW make now? I mean, even 10 years ago, it was 3 Series, 5 Series, 7 Series, and maybe the X3 and X5, and that was pretty much your lot, apart from the odd sports model. So now the range is just so full, it's unbelievable. There's no sector or niche that's been left unturned. But yeah, the 2 Series, basically a 1 Series with a boot, isn't it?
Yeah, I really like the original one. I remember it was a 223 diesel.
Yes, that was the 123 diesel.
Sorry, the 123 diesel.
That's right. The 2 Series was a separate.
I got that wrong.
A couple of years ago, but yeah, that basically was the 2 Series. Yeah.
It was so well balanced. It reminded me of the early M3s and the really early 3 Series cars because it was so kind of small and agile. But it was such a nice car to place on the road. It was really, really good. I always wanted one of those.
They're still in demand now. If you've a good 123D, you're probably still getting 7,000 or 8,000 for the blooming thing. I mean, it's, you know, in good nick. They're very much in demand. Yeah, it was really good. And of course the M2, they said they would never do it. The M2, and they've just redone that with the M3's engine, I believe. And apparently it's just phenomenal. I mean, it's just a proper hot rod with you get the competition pack on it. It's just a phenomenal machine.
I know that they do, and they do look nice. It's just small enough to work. The design is really effective.
It's not a 5-door saloon, is it? Because Audi do their version with the little 4-door, don't they? The A3 4-door, and they make a RS3 or something. But I'm not sure they do a 5-door. But yeah, it's another good car, another niche car. It's a bit of a stage up from the 2-door Nova saloon that they had in the 1990s.
They do, of course, the 2 Series Active Tourer and then the 2 Series Grand Tourer, both MPVs.
They are, I think the shorter one doesn't look good at all, but I think the longer one looks a little bit better.
But
I wonder how far BMW can really push their brand when they're making underpowered 5-door MPVs. I mean, it's not really... in touch with the brand's image.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the 2 Series like convertible, I've seen some really well-priced pre-reg cars. I think that's actually a really nice car for a convertible for that kind of money. Because again, what are you going to pay for something, you know, towards that? The Audi is at the A3 convertible. They're quite expensive. I think that you get some good deals on the BMW version. And I just think it's just a nice size again. You know, if you're a young person wanting a nice car and you can afford the PCP on it, it's probably quite a decent model to have.
The monthly is probably quite low because it's going to hold its value really well.
Yeah, it's quite different, you know. Get a nice colour, definitely an M-spec version with a little automatic gearbox, and I think it'd be a lovely car.
Definitely.
I certainly think that, you know, when you think, as you say, BMW are really sporty, and that's kind of their image. I don't think this Active Tourer, I mean, I haven't seen the sales figures for it, to be fair, but I can see that one being phased out and maybe dropped.
I think I see quite a few, to be honest.
Yeah,
I see quite a few.
I thought it might be replaced by the X2, if the X2 does well, and it looks lovely, I have to say, I really like the X2. They might maybe just make more adjustments on that to make it more kind of family friendly and more practical.
They might do. I tell you what, mine, the X2, if there's a car that is spec sensitive, it's the X2. In Edinburgh and it looks like a non-metallic black, or maybe it's just dirty. And it's got the small standard wheels on it. And I just thought, why would you do that? You bought a car which is a little bit smaller and more compromised than an X1. You paid more for it and it looks terrible. It's a really nice kind of vibrant kind of, I don't think it's metallic, a kind of candy blue colour. It looks phenomenal with a nice wheel of the M Sport pack.
Yeah.
I saw one in Vienna when I was over there a few weeks ago and it really looked phenomenal, actually. It really did look good.
Oh, well. So that's an interesting one. I've only ever seen it in the showrooms. I've never yet had a drive in it, but hopefully we'll get a drive in it in the next few months. But now, of course, we'll go on to the 3 Series. Which has so many different versions. Yeah, you've had saloons, you've had tourings. One of your very first cars was a touring, wasn't it?
First car was a 316 touring, and then I had a 316 coupe, then a 320i touring, then a 328i touring. Since then I've had a 335d touring, and mum's got another 335t touring X-Drive. So had a few of those, and they've all been phenomenal, actually. And I had the very first one, of course, that was the White 318 Touring back in 1989. One of the very first ones that they produced, which was really was a bit of a cut-and-shut job based on the saloon version. It had the same lights as the saloon, so there's very little room to put your shopping in because they didn't even change the lights at the back. But they've all been terrific, is what I can say. There's not been a dud. And the current range is very similar.
I remember the first one that you got, well, the 316 that you got. Was it a 316 Touring?
I had a 318, a black one. Yeah, diamond black.
And was it not around about £15,000 at the time?
And it wasn't even that. It was about 14.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I mean, okay, you've been driving for how many years? Since about 1994 or something? Or
94? Too long. Too many years. Yes.
24 years. 25-ish. Now, you can't even buy a new Fiesta for that less price.
I know.
And you just think, how much more car were you getting for your money? And we thought that was pricey at the time. You know, but it was a bargain, really, when you think what you're getting. And it was a nice car.
It's odd, though, because some cars, I think, are not that expensive. It's weird how you said the Fiesta is. I think it is. The starting price of over 15,000 seems incredibly high. But if you think about the cars that we used to have, certainly we used to have the Isuzu Trooper Citations, and they were about £30,000, £31,000 back in 1992. And now for £33,000. You can buy an X3 just about with phenomenal equipment on it for the same money as we were nearly 30 years ago. I mean, so I think in some ways cars have got an awful lot cheaper.
And there's big discounts and that.
Given the quality of them as well. I mean, what you're getting for your money. I mean, I remember the old automatics were just terrible, you know. You had no anti-lock brakes, no traction control. The fuel economy wasn't very good, but now the cars are phenomenal. We've got features on the cars we couldn't even dream of back in 1992, Hugh.
Well, even in the late 90s, I remember one of my mates, he had a Mitsubishi Colt, and it had a 3-speed automatic, and it was terrible. I mean, the jumps in between the gears were something else.
Yeah.
And now you have Mercedes with a 9-speed, whoever in their A-class or something, you know. I mean, it's incredible how the technology has got on, you know, and how it just works.
That's right. Because of electric cars, there's no gearboxes at all. That's probably the way it'll go.
Eventually, there's no gear at all. There was a thing the other day in Autocar magazine saying that the battery powered, or like the FEVs, you know, the kind of hybrid cars, have only actually sold 1.5% more units. It's only about 11,500 cars this year, which is not a lot. I mean, you know, they say they're all putting all this money into electric cars, but they're not really selling at all. I mean, that's nothing. You've got a market of nearly 2 million, and you've got, you know, and you're only sold 11,000.
Yeah, but I'm based in Edinburgh, as the listeners know, and I'm walking around the city of Edinburgh, and I don't see a single charging point. I'm not joking. I walked around the city for 2 or 3 hours today. It was a nice afternoon, doing a bit of shopping. I thought I'd leave the car home, and I didn't see one electrical charging point. So what are you meant to do? This is meant to be one of the most progressive, as they always say, cities, and there's not a charging point in sight. To get electric cars, I'm having a charging point put in my flat in next week. The only one I'll know in Edinburgh is the one in my own flat. There's not one public one available that I've seen. I'm sure there are some somewhere, but not in the city centre.
Yeah, well, that's one for our listeners. If you know where the charging points are in Edinburgh, you can let Jonathan know. You can email us at podcast@cardioadvisor.co.uk. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be right back. At cardioadvisor.co.uk, we can help you save thousands of pounds on your next new car or van. And we can also source second-hand cars as well. And we can save you money on car rental, whether it be in the UK and abroad. Just click our rental link on the website. And we'll give you a free gift if you trade in your car with We Buy Any Car using our special website link. So go to the website now and see how much you can save. And it's back to the show. Thanks for listening. Welcome back to the Car Do Advisor podcast show with me, Hugh Hattrick, and my very special guest, Jonathan Sutherland. Now, we were midway through the BMW models, so let's get on with the reviews. Now, we were up to the 3 Series, and now, of
what
course...
What comes after 3, Hugh?
Sorry?
What comes after 3?
4.
But
let's look 3.5, because there is the 3 Series Gran Turismo.
Oh, fair point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, in
Don't say you like it. Please no.
In some cars.
We've known each other 25 years.
Ah, yes, so we do have a big go-kart event on Sunday. But,
sorry.
I don't know. In M Sport versions, it looks all right. I've seen one or two and I thought, maybe in white or silver, you might get away with it.
When was your last visit to the optician studio? Did you get the prescription strengthened on your glasses, maybe? I don't know.
3 years ago, certainly, but...
yeah, that'll be it. That's it. No, I think there's obviously a lot of distortion in your eyesight there because I just see an amorphous blob.
Oh, well.
It looks awful. It's something weird. The Germans, apparently, they don't really like a stick. They kind of go for these strange things like the Audi A7.
Yeah.
Like the manufacturers or countries that make these cars have the A7 and a lot of the Mercedes sort of four-door coupe things. They're kind of bizarre. They seem to like them for some reason. And as Watt Car says, the Touring is better. It's quite clear, yeah.
Yeah, it says here in Autocar, hatchback practicality meets 3 Series dynamic talent. Dull but decent, according to them.
Dull but decent. That's exactly what you want from your
BMW.
£40,000 Bavarian beast, isn't it? Dull.
Okay, let's move swiftly on then.
I think we should, yes.
On to the 4 Series coupe, which kind of replaced the 3 Series coupe. Yeah, that was the...
Yes, it's BMW's new naming strategy is to have your practical cars as the odd numbers, so the 1 Series, the 3 Series, the 5 Series, then the more sporting cars are the 2 Series, the 4 Series, and the 6 Series, and the 8 Series. Oh. That's the where the 2 Series Active Tourer fits into that, I don't know, because it clearly doesn't. So someone didn't think that one through terribly well. But the 4 Series, yeah, basically the 3 Series Coupe, which, I think I've had one of those as well. Yeah. I mean, they are just 3 Series Coupes, that's what they are. So everything that applies to the 3 Series applies to the 4 Series, just with a little less space, but... Better looks, I would
say.
And they
do the Grand Coupe version of that, which I get. I quite like the Grand Coupe of that.
Yeah, it's funny how some things we just disagree on, Hugh.
I don't like the X4, though. I'm not so keen on the X4. I kind of don't. I know that's a bit further on the list, but I'm not quite so keen on that.
No, I'm agreed with you on that. But I don't understand how you can like the... It's a similar kind of style jacked up to the 3 Series Gran Turismo. It looks... like a 3 Series Gran Turismo on steroids, really. It's the same body shell, I think, even. Or very similar.
But, yeah, I think maybe certain ones I've seen have been in quite good colours.
Yeah, again, massively
so
spectacular.
Maybe just gives it a chance to look reasonable. But, so the 4 Series is very, very good in both coupe and convertible form. Very fast and lots of fun. Now, you've had quite a bit of experience of these cars, and so have I, of the 5 Series.
And yes.
It's a really nice car, actually.
They are, although I'm not... the current one, I don't like the look of it. I don't know. Yeah. I preferred the previous one. Yeah, I think it looks a bit awkward at the front and the back.
Oh, well.
I think the Audis look much better. The A6, there were two. I stopped at Edinburgh Castle on part of my walk, and there was a new 520D Touring parked up there. And next to it was an A6 Avant. And I thought the A6 just looked way better. It looked much better.
Really lovely wheels and
really sharp. And they were both M Sport sort of spec, or the BMW M Sport, and the Audi was a S-Line or whatever they call them. And I thought the Audi looked way better.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's interesting.
Car, I mean, very good cars and massive discounts.
Oh, huge amounts. Over 10 and 12,000 pounds off an A6 Avant, you know. Mind you, there's quite decent money off a 5 Series too.
I thought you were talking about the 5 Series. So, I mean, what sort of monthly would you be able to put, say, a 520D X-Drive on the road for M Sport?
Oh, well, you've caught me out on that one.
That was not fair. No, but are the deals on them?
There are deals. No, give me 2 seconds.
Because certainly hang down towards the dealerships. I often do, you know, waste some time on car dealership websites. Peter Vardy's in Edinburgh always have phenomenal discounts on them.
Yeah, and the PCPs are very strong.
Absolutely. I mean, the new 530Ds are about the same money as 330Ds, and they're a newer model. I thought I was misreading it, but it does seem to be the case that there's good deals out there.
5 Series Saloon, here we are.
Yeah.
We've got one here, the 520 Diesel 190 M Sport Automatic on a 3-year 6 plus 35, for just £330.38 plus VAT per month.
Yeah, it's
which
not
is
bad,
pretty
is
good
it?
Going. Yeah, it's pretty good going, really. For what I mean, it's a huge amount of car for the money, and it's a lovely car, really nice car. You know, it's you're not going to be disappointed with that.
No, not at all. And you've got the 518 is back. Remember when they made the 518?
Yes,
yeah. It just feels a bit undernourished, doesn't it? But I guess it's for the fleet buyers. But that's coming in at, I guess it has a list price of under £40,000. So for some people that are don't want to pay the higher car tax, it might make sense for them.
But no, cars are so cheap just now, but we'll get to that in a little while. But yeah, so it's, let's see what we can do here. Let's, I'll get back to the BMWs. Aye, so the 5 Series are incredibly cheap. No doubt about it, and very, very good value for what they are. In fact, that's one of the cheapest deals I've seen in a while. Because to get them, you know, doing enough, well, 330 is pretty good. £330 a month. Plus VAT for a car.
It's a lot of car, the money. You know, and if you've got a bit extra for the 530D, I believe that's won quite a lot of awards. It's certainly a 5-star car in car. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's pretty good going. But so then you've got the 6 Series. And also the 6 Series Gran Turismo. I do quite like the Gran Turismo one.
You know what? It looks better in the 6 Series.
I think it's bigger and faster.
It's longer, exactly. Yeah, so kind of the weird kind of curved roof line, it's a bit more elongated, whereas I think the other ones, they look a little bit sort of like humpback bridges driving along, you know. But because the 6 Series is longer, it's got a better look to it. And I guess there's big discounts on those, I'd imagine.
Oh, yes.
Always pretty chunky discounts on that model.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of money off. I would expect at least 15 to 20 grand off some of them.
Wow.
You know, it's quite a bit. I can get you an exact figure. But to give you an example of what is available, let's have a look.
Because they've bought in the 620D now, so it's a much smaller engine option for that car. It's quite a small engine, but what sort of price can 620Ds come in at? Because their list price is about 43,000, which isn't too bad.
Actually, to be fair, all the ones I've got are the kind of higher-end models.
Right.
So, yeah. That would be one I'd have to get a specialist quote on. But, I mean, there's always good margin on that kind of car. It's always going to be decent. And, yeah, it's such a nice car. And even with that Gran Turismo, whether diesel or petrol, I think that's going to be quite a nice machine to have.
Definitely.
I'll let you take over while I quickly do some research.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if we move on from the 5 Series, well, the 6 Series, obviously... 7 Series comes next, and 7 Series is a car which has never really sort of been as good as the S-Class in the eyes of most road testers and reviewers, but it's a car that I really like in its current form. It does look a bit like a big 5 Series, to be fair to it, but I've had some long wheelbase ones, and the rear of those cars is just phenomenal. You've got kind of a touch screen, almost like an iPad to control things with, screens in the back of the TVs, massage seats, heated seats, cooled seats. Just a phenomenal looking machine, to be honest, in the back there. Really enjoy, I'd quite like one, to be honest. And if you can get one about 18 months old, the depreciation is just phenomenal. So for £40,000, I reckon you can get yourself into a current shape 7 Series. Probably even less than that, actually.
Here we are, the 6 Series M Sport Gran Turismo. I've got two here. There's the 3-liter turbo diesel, so it's a 630 diesel. Automatic. That's done mileage, to be fair. We'll try and find one with a little. Here's one with 1,000 miles. It's on 1,000 miles, and it's only £34,990.
Yeah, and that's the 330D, is it?
Yeah.
So that car's a 55,000 pound car.
And it's an 18 plate. 18 plate, yeah. So it's.
I mean, there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah, and there's even cheaper ones. The 2-liter petrol on an 18 plate with 150 miles on the clock is just £35,850.
Wow.
Here's one here. Look, it's a 67 plate with 10,000 miles. Cost new 70 grand, save 34,000. It's basically it's half price in a year.
Yeah.
And that's 35,990. And it's a lovely car. I mean, it just shows you what kind of value you get. I mean, the PCP is saying here 653 a month, but that's just one example. You might be able to get that a bit less. But I mean, it's not bad. You know, it's certainly a pretty good deal.
Because
you've got to think, it's going to be worth something after, you know, 5 years, isn't it? You know, you think something worth maybe 12, 13, 14 after 5 years?
Well, you think it'd be worth more than that, because there's a whole load of kind of wannabe gangsters around the place that love those kind of cars.
Yeah. So you kind of think it's got to be, you know, it's got to have some value in it for sure. But as you're saying on the 7 Series, they are phenomenal. Really lovely cars. Interiors and everything are spectacular. But then so is the Mercedes S-Class, the new version of that.
Yeah, it's very true. The competence of those cars is just phenomenal. Remember, I drove a couple of S-Classes at Millbrook when we were there in June. And I think when we discussed it when we left, my favourite car was the S-Class.
Because
it was just so blimmin' competent. It was almost as sort of pointy as a Renault Megane RS. But it was cool and collected as a Range Rover. And the interior was incredible. The big TFT screens were great. The fit and finish was perfect. They were powerful. They were fast. And I was even looking at second-hand ones as soon as we got back. I was thinking maybe an S320 would just be, and because they're obviously cars that people are quite picky about, and they maybe choose all kinds of different specifications on them. And maybe they get changed a lot. The depreciation is pretty high, so you could get sort of 25 to 30,000, maybe not the absolutely current one. But you could get a really nice Mercedes-approved S-Class between 25 and 30. And there's loads of them.
Yeah. And what a car to have. I mean, I remember when you drove it and you were so impressed. I have to say that's one car I would really like to drive over the next few months, is to get a chance to drive one of those. I think it would be fantastic. But and as you say, there's phenomenal deals on them. Yeah, I mean, you can save, even for example, here's an S350 diesel. So it's a long wheelbase, the AMG line, with the 9-speed automatic. List price is £77,235. And you can get it for a shade over £67,000. So you're getting 10 grand off straight away.
You are, but you really want to buy one 2 or 3 years old.
Yeah, which is obviously lost a bit more.
Then you can turn that 65 into 35. I mean, and at that point, it's just a phenomenal value for money.
It's quite a machine. Even in base spec, it's pretty good. We can't really say there's a base spec Mercedes-Benz S-Class because it's got more technology than pretty much more cars put together. With the kind of standard things you get with a Mercedes S350, and it'll be a fast car as well. Actually, I mean that's really
quick. And they've got a 4-cylinder one now as well. Is it not an S220? Yeah, they've got the S220 version, which has got the basically a C-Class engine in it, but you've got all the space and refinement of the S-Class. And that's when I actually tried to drive it. I actually took a S320 by mistake. It would have been good to drive the 4-cylinder one just to see what it was like.
But no, that was, it was certainly, it's a lovely, lovely car for sure. Definitely one to put on your shopping list if you can. Now we've got the 8 Series as well. Because that's just been real.
I haven't ever seen one.
No, neither have I. The two-door coupe. It starts off at £76,000. It gets a good write-up, according to Autocar.
But then you want the 850i X-Drive, don't you? You want the 530 brake horsepower one, 0 to 60 in 3.7 seconds. That's the one you want.
Aye, definitely. So, yeah, no, that's one that we must have literally just come out, I think. So we'll need to see what that one's like. Maybe they'll have it at Millbrook next year.
They might do, but they probably won't let us drive it.
Turn up with your race suit and your helmet.
That's right, your Sparco boots.
Yeah, so you're a professional. But there we go. So now we're into the X version cars. The X1, the X2, X3, X4, X5, X6. And then there's going to be an X7, isn't there?
An X7, absolutely. So is that every number? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It is. Yeah, there's no 8, sorry. But as far as 7, they all have their own SUV, which I suppose makes sense. And again, it's just staggering the number of models that BMW have.
Yeah.
There's a segment that these big German companies don't have covered.
Aye.
One niche left unturned, if that's what makes it metaphor.
Aye.
Well, the X1, I quite like it. I can see it's a sort of family favourite, isn't it?
Yes, they are very popular. Big on the Motability list as well. A lot of people.
Yeah, I bet they are.
That, But the X2 is one of my favourite looking cars at the moment. I think that's a really nice looking car. And some quite good deals on them, actually. There's, you know, reasonable savings. And it is, I think it's a car that will, you know, hold its value relatively well.
It is, but you've got to get the right spec.
Mm. Aye, that's for sure. X3. Now, the old one was really quite bad, but the new one is an awful lot better.
It is. It's a step change.
Yeah, yeah. They do look quite nice. And they, mind you, they start out at nearly £40,000.
Exactly. I mean, this car is not a cheap car anymore. You think the X3, to me, I'm thinking sort of 25 to 30 starting point.
Yeah, yeah, that's what you think.
Them in listings. And, well, is the one less than, yeah, the basic 2-litre one, SE, which no one's going to buy because it's going to look terrible, is 39,000. Yeah. So to get any kind of spec, you're looking at 43, 44, 45, something like that.
And you can get like a Jaguar F-Pace R-Sport for not much more money than an entry-level BMW X3. So,
yeah.
You know.
But the thing is, it'll be really good. I don't know what the Jag's like. I mean, it's quite good, isn't it?
Yeah, the F-Pace is good. F-Pace
is pretty good. Yeah. But it's old now. It's been out, what, for 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
Maybe they can do an update, but the X3s are just, there's dealers everywhere. There's always good PCPs.
Yeah.
Always incentives from the main dealers. And, yeah, you can see how they sell them. It's five stars.
Pile them high and sell them cheap, you know.
I know. It probably is BMW these days, isn't it? As we're saying, prestige is dead.
Yeah. It's quite a thing. Now, will we go on to the X5?
Interesting.
We've had a bit of a history with that car, haven't we? We drove one of the first ones that ever came out. The V8 version.
X Reg?
I think it was something Millennium car, wasn't it?
Yeah, about 2000 was that when it was introduced. It was one of the first ones. I think it's maybe the first one I'd ever seen. Was
car
that
I cancelled a date for.
Yeah. That is dedication to your profession, cancelling dates to drive performance SUVs. But it was a date with a great car, that's for sure.
I don't know if I regret that. That might be a 50-50 on that one.
yeah. Your wife is nearby, you know, you've got to be careful what you say. You don't regret anything in your life. Yeah, I remember going down and, I mean, we must have been that old, Hugh. We must have been in our really early 20s.
We'd have been about
23, 22, yeah. So we turned up, you know, fresh-faced youths, and picked up this brand-new BMW X5. And
then we went to your mum's car, didn't we? Because I couldn't have gone in an old Volkswagen Polo or whatever.
That's right, I took the old 540 down. It wasn't old then, it was the new 540 down, and picked it up. Had the same engine, but for some reason, in the X5, that 4.4-litre V8, I think it was tuned differently. The Americans must, because they're obviously built in South Carolina.
Yeah.
They always have been. The factory was pretty new back then. But for some reason, the Americans obviously like the straight-through exhaust or something. And that V8 just sounded phenomenal. Yeah. And I remember accelerating onto the Western Bypass in Newcastle. And just, it was like days of thunder. accelerate.
We turned the lights off. Remember there was that thing when you turned the lights off and we couldn't figure out what the light switch was or something.
Oh, yes. That's right. I ended up with the lights off going about 90.
It was 90 kilometres an hour.
90 kilometres an hour, which is completely legal in the UK. Yeah, it was a black SUV with black leather with the lights off.
Yeah,
we took it up coast to some of the coastal towns in Northumberland, and no one had seen anything like it. I mean, it was just turning heads, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then you had to go, and there were some interesting manoeuvres in sea houses. I remember that. And we almost took out Mavis. And you just said, I feel invincible. I was like, can I get out, please?
It was an amazing machine. Absolutely amazing machine. It just set a trend that nothing else could touch. I mean, that came out. And then, of course, the new Range Rover came out. At the time, and so that was kind of they just were two phenomenal SUVs. And
that's right. Well, the Range Rover would be 2 or 3 years later, and that wasn't as good to drive as the X5.
No,
it was a heavier, more sedate car. It had the same engine, of course, but it was because it was owned by BMW, wasn't it, at that time? They were both owned by the same company, I think. Great cars, and I don't know why. I think the later models of X5 never really
had a bit lame.
First one. I suppose it had been done by then, but the first one, it was clearly, it looked a little bit awkward, and it was obviously kind of something that Skunk Works had come up with, you know, the special version had been working away in a shed, all the weird engineers that they don't let loose normally. They put together this rather odd looking thing that I think was based on a 5 series. Maybe even the previous 5 series, the one that we had. And it didn't quite look completely right, but it had character.
Yeah.
And it was different. And it kind of had soul. And maybe the new ones don't have that. They're thoroughly competent, but they're much more commonplace.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. So, how about the X6?
Yeah, again, I think we might disagree on this. For me, the X6 is kind of a bit of a gangster's car.
Yeah, it does. I nearly got to drive a V12 one once when they did. Again, that was in during the recession time, about 2010, 2011, because my mother was offered a phenomenal deal on one. Like, you know, we were like about 30 grand off, and it had done about 4,000 miles. But the battery had gone flat, so we couldn't drive that one, and we had to drive a diesel, which wasn't anywhere near as fun.
It'd be a V8, I think. I don't know. They put the V12
in. It was a V8 turbo or something. It was quite a.
The X6M was a V8 twin turbo, I think.
Ah, right. Then that's what it was.
It was 500 plus brake horsepower, but it was an 8 on a 12.
That was quite a machine. But it does have that kind of look to it, like an gangster car. Interesting. I just don't know if it's worth the money, though. I think that there's 61,000.
Are they a lot more than the X5?
There's 61,000. Yeah, about 4 grand more than a new X5. Yeah.
Mind you, the X5, the new X5 is starting at 50 something.
And a half, yeah. Goes up to 97,000. I mean, an X4 is 43, going up to 55. You know, so...
Who's buying these cars? Big either.
But, now, you've got experience of the next car, which is the BMW i3. What do you think of that?
Yes, a car that I've done a bit of driving around in. Well, it comes in two forms. It's a range extender version, and you can get a pure electric one. But from the middle of next year, it's only available as pure electric. They're taking away the range extender option, which is, I think it's a controversial move, but I suppose it makes it back into a pure electric car, I suppose. But with the paucity of charging points around the UK, I'm not sure it's going to be so good for their sales, actually, but they said they put a slightly better battery on it, but the security of the petrol engine was always pretty good. Yeah, so it's a range extender. It is a fully electric car. When it's not running in electric mode, the range extender is a 2-cylinder engine, which just produces electricity, and then the electricity powers the motor. So it's not a hybrid as such. It's pure electric with a range extender function. That's for Californian rules. It has to be that way. It's fun. It's been around a while now. I mean, it's just been launched, 5 or 6 years ago, I suppose.
Yeah.
2013, something like that, first ones came out.
It's quite a startling design, isn't it? It's quite very different to look at.
It really is. As an electric car should be, it looks different because the layout's different. The batteries are all under the floor. It doesn't need a long nose. So you want to try and get an aerodynamic design and a light design. Yeah. So that's what they've done. You've got aerodynamic wheels, the body is carbon fiber or carbon reinforced plastic, and the interior is made of recycled plastic in places as well. And it's kind of quite a space age kind of design.
Yeah.
But they're nippy. You can get up to 0-60 in about 7 seconds.
That's
You get electric range is around about 85 to 90 miles. Maybe a bit more than that, actually. A bit more than that. And maybe about 100 miles on the range extender.
Oh, that's quite good.
Yeah, a total mileage distance with both the battery full and the range extender petrol tank full is probably around about 180 to 200 miles.
Right, okay. Oh, well, so that's quite good. Now, the last car in the range that we have here is the i8, a car that we've both driven. And I have to say, I loved it. I thought the engine sound was amazing. It was a really, that was at Millbrook a couple of years ago, and it was just, I would have really quite liked to have driven home in that. It was really nice. It was fun, and it felt like a proper, supercar.
A nice car. It's a bit different. A 3-cylinder engine. So a lot of the noise that you hear is actually a bit synthetic. It almost doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter because it just sounds so, good.
Yeah, real rasp to it.
A good friend of mine had an i8. We went out car shopping. He had a bit of money, more than me. And we were at the Porsche dealer, and we just went, nah. The new 991, it just was too like other Porsches that we'd had before. So we thought, no, it's time to move on. So we went down the road to an independent BMW dealer who had this white i8 sitting in their 64 plate one. And we took it for a drive, and my mate just said, "I'll take it." Like, oh, right, okay, that's a decision made.
Serious cash.
Yeah, exactly. So he went to pick it up, and yeah, he really enjoyed it. Four-wheel drive, it doesn't feel too big on the road. It's really easy to place on the small roads around Sussex. It was easy to drive. But in the last few months of its warranty, it had a massive electrical problem. The interface between the charging points and the battery and the control systems that control the battery all went wrong on the car. It was, I think, £18,000 repair.
Goodness.
And it was just about to go out of warranty. And my mate was just, he lost his confidence then, because if he'd had that car and it had cost him £18,000, he wouldn't have been happy. So he got rid of it at that point and bought Teslas.
All right. Plural. All right. Oh, well, my goodness. That's, because they're quite hard to get. Tesla, but yeah, well, that's an interesting roundup of the BMW models that are available on the UK roads. But let us know what you think for all our listeners. You can email us at podcast@cardoadvisor.co.uk, and we're just going to go to a very short break. For more information, go to cardoadvisor.co.uk, and you can see all the special offers that we have on the website. Remember, we have our YouTube channel, which is at QHatrick, and also we have our podcast on Podbean, on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Anchor FM. And if you like what you hear, please like and subscribe to our shows, or you can donate every month for just a pound. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye. And welcome back to the Cardo Advisor podcast show with me, Hugh Hattrick, and my very special guest, Jonathan Sutherland. So we've finished our roundup of the BMW models. And then the next podcast, I think we should do maybe Audi. Audi might be quite a good one. It's a very popular make. And I'm sure we could do Land Rover, and we'll get inundated with complaints about breakdowns and everything else. Like, you're starting a Land Rover, they're so nice, but they do tend to fare rather poorly when it comes to reliability. Although you were saying actually that Volvo is simply the worst. Was it the XC90 is one of the most unreliable cars on the road today?
Well, it does seem to be. It has a very bad reputation for reliability. This was just from the Daily Mail, so I don't know how true it is. It had quite a funny article. It wasn't the worst. The worst was a Range Rover Sport diesel. And the article said, the only thing worse than spending £60,000 on an unreliable SUV is spending £85,000 on an unreliable SUV. I don't know why I thought Volvo had a reputation for reliability, but it seems the XC90 seems to have a few problems there.
Yeah. Because, I mean, normally Volvo got quite a good reputation for, you know, building strong, tough, and pretty reliable cars. I mean, I think they've had, in the years gone by, they've had Renault engines, they've had all sorts, and they've managed quite well. But obviously, now it's Chinese ownership, isn't it? Before when it was sold off from Ford. But we'll have to see how that goes, as to hopefully they improve. Because they've got some lovely lineups, and we'll definitely do the whole Volvo manufacturer range to see what it's like, because there's quite a few of them out now. And we can see what that's like. So now, you were saying that you had watched the Grand Prix, because that's the other big event of the last couple of days.
Absolutely. I thought it was hilarious.
It was very funny.
It only cemented the fact that Max Verstappen is my favourite Grand Prix driver now of all time, I think, just about. He's just hilarious. And he couldn't accept what happened. For those of you who didn't see it, Verstappen did brilliantly. He got past, the car was just working really well on its tyres. And he managed to get past all the Ferraris and the Mercedes-Benz, and was leading really quite comfortably until a back marker, Ocon, is it Emmanuel Ocon?
Yeah.
It was Esteban Ocon.
Esteban Ocon.
Decided to unlap himself and put his car up the inside of Verstappen on the first corner or second corner, depending on how you look at it, at Interlagos in Brazil. They both spun off.
They clashed together and that was it.
That's right. To say Verstappen was not happy was an understatement, wasn't it, Hugh?
Yeah. Well, it was brilliant. And in the end, when the race finished, and of course Hamilton won by about a second and a half, so it was a great kind of victory for him. It secured the fifth world title for the constructors for Mercedes. But poor old Verstappen had a bit of a kind of, not quite a fisticuffs with Ocon in the weigh room, but he certainly started pushing him around. And of course, he had to do 2 days public service because he was hauled in front of the stewards not long afterwards, when they said, you can't do that.
Max Verstappen going around sweeping gravel on some of the corners. Got marshals and put his face on. It's really very funny. But he did push up on a bit, to be fair. It probably wasn't quite right what he did down there.
When I saw it, I actually thought, I mean, all the commentators were saying that, you know, Ocon should have got out the way. But he was kind of neck and neck with him. I mean, I think Verstappen did shut the door coming into the right-hand bend of the Senna S's and that. But yeah, so I thought it was maybe not quite as much Ocon's fault as they kind of were saying.
I agree with you entirely. I think he was, and Hamilton was very dismissive of Verstappen in the room before they go on the podium, wasn't he? I don't know whether you heard what he said. Verstappen was complaining about what had happened, and Hamilton just said, he's got a right to unlap himself. You had more to lose. And he turned away. I don't know whether you saw that. And that was Hamilton just sort of slapping him down slightly, I think. In other words, don't, you know, I'm the boss around here. Don't come whinging to me. So it's very good.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think, I mean, Verstappen is very, very good. I mean, an awful lot better than his father was. You know, he's proven that he can win races and do quite well. But I just don't know if he's as good as some of the others, you know, like Hamilton. I mean, even in the same car, I think he's more likely to make mistakes or maybe just be a bit too aggressive. And I just don't know if he maybe takes more out of his car than he should do. And also, I mean, earlier on in the year when he was having huge fights with Ricardo, I mean, they quite often clashed. Mm-hmm. Was it at Baku in Azerbaijan and others, you know, so they've had quite a few comings together. In fact, they came together, where was it? It was in, what was one of the recent races? Was it? No, it wasn't Singapore. I'm trying to remember where they came together. And they were both out. Met maybe it was Japan or one of the ones where they were attacking each other. So it was certainly, they've had quite a few clashes. But, I mean, Hamilton has just done amazingly well this year. Really just, you know, and won races he never should have won. You know, through the poor strategy from Ferrari. But Hamilton just kept going. Of course, Vettel kept crashing into people and had all sorts of incidents as well.
It sounds like a terrible year. It's like he wasn't concentrating.
Yeah.
When you watch him drive, it's like he's texting at the same time or something. He just seems to bump into people and misjudge things, doesn't he, all the time? So many spins he's had. He's spun about 3 times in 3 races, isn't he? It's extraordinary.
Because he started well.
Just absolutely been totally concentrating, totally focused. And to be honest, I never really thought he was going to win the championship, you know, after the mid-season. It was just Hamilton all the way.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly did. Because, and when you think the Mercedes wasn't as good as the Ferrari for a lot of it. It was, you know, it was down on power or down on, for, you know, outright speed. It wasn't great at following other cars as well. And yet they've still managed to do some really impressive race victories and finishes, which has been phenomenal. But so I think, yeah, we're looking forward to Abu Dhabi in a week's time. And looking forward to our go-karting event on Sunday. That should be fun.
Yeah, thinking about that, actually. Obviously, I'm completely over what happened in 1993, in February 1993, in the kart track at Lanzarote, when you took me out, Hugh. Yeah, that's right. I was at least, well, okay, that's not a good example. I was going to say it's like Ocon and Verstappen. But you just said it wasn't Ocon's fault. So you said Verstappen had more to lose. So and I was definitely more alongside you than Ocon was alongside Verstappen. I was pretty much through, and that door was just slammed in my face.
I didn't even hear. I think I felt a little nudge, but that's all I felt. And then off I just carried on because, you know, there was no problem. And then I realised that you weren't behind me, and you weren't in front of me. And then when I came round the next lap, you were standing up outside of your car,
shaking my fist at you. That's right.
Oh, it was funny, and I really couldn't figure out what had happened until eventually we came in.
Yeah, said like that night back in the hotel, that's for sure. Yeah, it was pretty silent, bit of a supper.
That was very funny. And even your mum said, look, you have to just talk to him. over our spaghetti bolognese.
I'm not talking to him. He was wrong. The steward did nothing.
So it should be fun. It'll be a good laugh. It'll be all our kind of friends from Longridge will be there, so it should be a laugh.
Exactly. And the tracks these days are marshaled much, much better.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
if anything like that happens again, you'd be in. You'd be in for a penalty. I mean, that'll be it. You can't get away with that again. Not that I've let it bother me for the last 20 years.
We've only been 25 years.
25 years, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it should be good fun. It should be good fun. Well, look, it's been an absolute laugh to have do the podcast with you tonight. Thank you very much for taking part. And thanks to our listeners. You've been listening to the Cardo Advisor podcast show with me, Hugh Hattrick, and my special guest, Jonathan Sutherland. Bye just now.